So Luca Masarong, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. I'm very glad to be here with you.
We're very honored to have you here. And it's been a while, right, Fabrício, since we last spoke about Kaggle and what it does and the impact it has in the broader machine learning community and what stems from there. And this is actually the third time we have the honor of having a Kaggle Grandmaster here on a podcast, which is in itself pretty cool. But as a refresher, or for any listeners who might have joined us after we last spoke about Kaggle, would you mind going over what it is and why it's so cool, actually?
Yes, of course. Kaggle is a platform for data science competitions. So it's like programming competition, math competition. You have some kind of problems and you put together a lot of people to try to figure out how to solve that problem in a competitive way, because you have a leaderboard, so everyone can get a score based on their answer or performance. And in the end, there are, of course, prizes and some kind of honorable mention if you rank among the first. And the Kaggle is particular because actually before there have been a few contests, especially tied to KDD, Knowledge Discovery Conferences, where actually you had to figure out how to solve a problem in machine learning by using code, data, and so on. But it was the first of its kind, its format, and it appeared quite a crucial moment. And that's the reason why I got involved so much in the platform, to the point of becoming a Kaggle Grandmaster. It appeared at about 2010, 2011. It was the time when data science was becoming a very hot field, something that everyone was wondering, what's that? How can I enter the field? How much can I earn? So as soon as I started brushing up my knowledge of machine learning through, for example, Coursera, there were the courses by Andrew Ng, among the others, I immediately noticed that a lot of people were mentioning in the forums about Kaggle. And so myself, I say, what is that? I wanted to know a little bit about that. And I tried the first competition, which I can confess went absolutely wrong, totally wrong.
Do you remember what it was?
It was about detecting in tweets, so on Twitter, the psychological profile of a writer.
Right.
And it was based on the Big Five. Big Five is a psychological profiling, which is commonly used, especially in advertising. It's quite simple. For example, you have measurement like openness or neuroticism. Actually, the contest I took part in as my first Kaggle competition aimed at detecting the posts made by people who had some, you know, neurotic personality. It was quite interesting. And at the time, I was a consultant and I was working a lot on advertising. And basically, it was cool to think, okay, take part in this competition because I can learn something new I can apply to my job. And so that was, as I already told you, one of the first secrets of these platforms. You do it for competition, you do it for glory, yes. But even if there's no glory, no medals, no points, and so on, and no money, because there's also sometimes money attached, you can learn a lot. So just for learning is a fantastic place. So I started my competition, and by chance, because I tried a lot of, we call it submissions, even you prefer a solution, and you send it to the platform for evaluation, I ranked at the beginning among the first three or four, so quite high. But as soon as the competition closed, there was the moment of truth. Because it works this way, when you have a model, it's very easy to predict on, of course, the train set. So the data you are using for your algorithm to learn. It is, of course, a little bit more challenging to predict on the test. But as you have a test available, actually by multiple times of trying and retrying, you can do what is called adaptive overfitting. So basically, you are in a way or another, consciously or unconsciously, if you try many times, adapting your model also to the test set. And then it will perform very well also on the test set. Kaggle had a way to prevent that. Now he's more sophisticated. He was much more naive at the beginning, but it was quite effective. Okay, they gave us the test set, but we didn't know what part was being used for the public leaderboard. So for the leaderboard, the rankings that we continuously were aware during the competition, and for the private leaderboard, the effective leaderboard used for then rankings, points, money, and medals, which was actually hidden. So if you did adaptive overfitting on the public leaderboard, actually that could imply that, okay, you were doing something good on that part of a test set, but not on all. This is because all these models are expected to perform in a way that is generalizable. So you learn from a task, so you have examples, but the model learns to do that task at large. So it also faced with new examples, it can perform properly. And I didn't know that so well. I was myself quite naive at the time. So probably I overfitted the leaderboard, as technically said. And when, you know, the final results appeared, I jumped back in rankings about 80 or 90 positions. Anyway, it was quite shameful. But I said, it really didn't go as I expected, but it's fantastic. Because I had the occasion to try a lot of data that I usually don't do at work. I managed to brush up my knowledge. At that time, it was all random forest, which is a basic, but it's still quite effective algorithm based on trees. And I learned a lot. There were still, you know, not so much interaction, but actually I found some posts, some interesting discussion with forums. So I got stick to that. And I didn't count how many competitions I took from that time, which was almost 15 years ago now. I'm expecting the 15 years badge on Kaggle, but probably they are in the range of 300 competitions. It's important to say some were taken very seriously, some were taken just for, you know, trying the data and, you know, seeing how that could work.
Gotta have some fun, right? And still talking about these early days, there's this XKCD comic that I love. It's kind of outdated today, that there are two characters talking, and there's this, one of them is a developer, right? And then there's someone standing behind them going like, okay, so the app, the user, when the user takes a photo, it needs to know if it's of a national park. And the developer goes like, well, that's pretty easy. Just give me a few hours. And it goes like, yeah, but has to check whether there's a photo of a bird too. And he goes like, yeah, I need 5 years and a team of research engineers, right? Because it's a simple request, but the answer is not so simple, right? So with that in mind, I bet that there were challenges in these early days of Kaggle that were very, very, very hard to even comprehend how you try to approach the solution. And that must be so trivial today, right? There's like an API that does all of that, right? Can you maybe recall something that felt out of this world different, that is just so trivial today, you didn't even think about that didn't exist back then?
Marcus, there are quite a lot of examples. Anyway, as far as comics, I think the best comic for, you know, figuring out what's happening in Kaggle is instead that other comic. We have two people talking and one is of a pile of, you know, dust, trash, and so on. And he's explaining that he's his own model. And basically, you know, when you take part in a Kaggle competition, all your models are like that, a pile of trash. Because you iterate so many things so fast that, of course, you cannot produce clean code. And it's not, of course, absolutely code for production.
Right.
Anyway. It's still a very good gym, even if you just, you know, produce just, you know, experimentation and so on. I remember a few competitions, but you can take any competition, any recurrent competition, and see what's happening 1 year and the next year. What is the winning solution for the previous years will be not ranking very high anymore. Because
right.
The principle is that on Kaggle, you try something, and by experimentation, you find a good platform to start working more on the problem. But if we take now the capabilities of machine learning models, variability of data, especially the new current of AI with, you know, models which are able to understand text, language, of course, text and language, vision, images, and even now we are able to predict time series and tabular data by in-context learning. It means that basically you are just, you know, putting your data inside the context, as it were, a ChatGPT prompt. Of course, that's not transparent, but the principle is that, and they can predict the result. And it's incredibly precise because they are pre-trained to figure out how variables and information you put into the context relay. Anyway, now we have so fantastic tools that competition like dog and cats, for example, one of my favorite, because I managed to rank 9th or 10th, and it was a big struggle, you know. Just 5,000 images of dog and cats, and you have to figure out which was a dog, which was a cat. So that are things that make us laugh today, because we have a lot of pre-trained models. You take any model and you just, in a few minutes, have something working just by a few training examples or even by zero shot. So no example, just ask, what is this? Is it a cat or a dog? So that was incredibly simple. Other were, I remember, competitions on detecting appliances in the house based on, you know, the kind of consummation they had. There were competitions, incredible, about, for example, prices of used cars. All these things today are really, really made very easily. But all that we did at the time was kind of pioneeristic. So we were pioneers. And most of us, and I think still the tradition, actually, we are not at all experts in the field. So there are, I took part in competition about physics, which I really not a very good expert at all. But when you enter a competition, you just took the information, you study, you start to research, and you start, which is most important, to interact. Many of the solutions sometimes are based just on public code that someone decided to share with the others. And a lot of people just, you know, built on that and found out how to perfect the solution.
That's really interesting, Luca. And myself, I was playing a little bit with Kaggle. Of course, I don't come anywhere close to your level, but I see what you mean. It's like, it's fun that one day you're doing something like about Titanic and the other one like a spaceship. And the other day you were analyzing fungi, like different types of fungi. Yeah. Which has nothing to do with anything, but it's super cool. And you told us a little bit about your story on how you started on Kaggle and doing the competitions and all. Do you remember what was the first competition that you won? And you're like, oh yeah, that's how it feels.
Okay. I never won a competition. Oh. So I never ranked among the first ones. I ranked in the top 10 because at the time the rules was that you needed a certain number of competitions in the top 10 rank to become a master.
Yeah.
At the time, you know, when I started, the top was the master level. Then they, you know, revamped everything, I think 2016 or 17, and it became, you know, with grandmaster title, so even higher, so more complicated. And the first one was the one about the electric appliances, where I ranked, I remember, 10th. Mm-hmm. It was something that it was really puzzling for me. But I say this is an interesting competition. Not so many people are taking it. Not so many people are understanding what's happening. Because if I look at the leaderboard, there are just a few top, you know, ranking of a public one, which are performing very good. They are probably domain specialists. And all the other people are just, you know, way far in score from them. It means that they are not understanding what they can do. So I say, let's start with it. And I looked at the competition probably now so long time ago, probably in the last weeks. You usually took competition one after the other. So I really had very little time to study and to do everything properly. So it was just a rush to understand. I remember that one was quite puzzling because he used irrational numbers. in order to, yes, to describe the wavelength form of a, you know, electrical consumption, electrical fluctuation in the house. And so I say, this is very tricky, but okay. First, everyone in the forum just says, okay, let's, you know, take the rational, irrational part of a number. We are two separate features. So that's okay. I really did 80% of the job. And now let's figure out how to do something good of that. And I decided it was the right strategy. I decided to admit I won't ever be able to perform this competition unless I take a PhD in electrics. So I should do something easy, easy peasy. In the house, there are a few appliances that are very big. And one is the refrigerator. The refrigerator, probably if it is just like the refrigerator in my house, suddenly we start, you know, and make a lot of consumption because you put something in the fridge, because you open it and so on. So I started looking for spikes in the signal, and I just built a model to recognize the spikes and just classify them as refrigerators. And that was enough for the 10th place position. Incredible, incredible. But I think you can take from this absurd competition the lesson that, okay, no matter you know about a topic, you can study and figure out the basics in a very short time. And no matter how complicated is a problem, you can, you know, split it into parts and take the part that you can handle and solve it. And probably was the best algorithm in all the leaderboard that, you know, spotted the refrigerators. I bet no other else could manage doing that.
Really cool. And now I'm going to ask a question which is, may take some time to answer it, because I know that the answer is, it depends. But you wrote a book with Bojan Tungus and Konrad Banachevich as well, both also Kaggle grandmasters, and the title of the book is The Kaggle Book, like basically how to master the competitions, use machine learning to try to position higher in this competition. So I assume that you're teaching in this book like how to go about when you face a new problem or different types of problem, what to do exactly. But tell our audience, please, when you have a new challenge there, let's suppose, I don't know, something with Twitter, tweets that you mentioned, or something with text, doesn't matter. What is your approach when you have to tackle this new problem?
In Kaggle competition, as well as in other situations, let's say stick to Kaggle competitions. You have various ways to figure out what to do if you are really new to the field and to the problem. First of all, look for other Kaggle competitions. Sometimes, you know, the topic is recurrent and you can find other competitions that show to you something not the same, but similar. But the methods usually, they tend to appear everywhere. So you can figure out something from there. Second place, the discussions. There are the forums and you can just post your question or just, you know, lurk around and look at what other people are writing. You can learn really a lot from that. Then do your search. Open Google, go to, for example, to Scholar, the Google version for Scholar papers, look for papers, look for blog posts and people who face the problem. You know, the queries you can make is really not too complicated. You look, for example, for a topic, you write machine learning, you write artificial intelligence, and a lot will pop up that can be useful. Nowadays, you also have good addition, ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini. You ask them, you inquire a lot, you do the deep search that is you ask for grounding, which means that, okay, you don't rely just on the knowledge they have embedded into their weights, but you also ask them to do as a rack, to do a search on the web and to integrate their answer based also on the search. And then you can really learn a lot by interacting with the AI about the problem and get a lot of ideas. So this is the standard course of action I suggest for learning what to do. Then you have, of course, to do something, which is to build up a model. And again, I wrote it in the book, and is my standard approach that I always remark, start simple. start with the simplest model possible.
Logistic regression.
Logistic regression, linear regression, or even something more basic, like a median or an average, which sometimes are surprisingly effective for certain problems, especially the problems with finance or for example, forecasting time series. Sometimes you cannot but, you know, guess if this problem too challenging, you don't have information and, you know, variance is too high. You just have to point to, you know, a simple descriptive technique. But do something simple and create your pipeline. So you create a code that in the competition or your data, because this is applicable to every problem that science can take you from the data to the solution, so the prediction. Do the pipeline and make it open for experimentation. So don't make it too tight to the problem. Leave space, for example, for feature engineering, so adding new features, for testing different validation approaches, for tweaking a little bit the hyperparameters, because all these models have some parameters that can be optimized based on the data you have, and then have a way to predict, have a prediction that you can test. At the point you have all the pipeline that can be improved for experimentation. And then you can put there even the most fancy, most sophisticated solution you can imagine. That's the principle. But you start simple. You start from that, okay? It works, you test it, you can submit to Kaggle and have a result. Probably you will be the last one. Many competition I started as, you know, the last among the, you know, the bottom of the leaderboard. No worries. It's just the start. It's just the start, but you have the way to reiterate and improve. And then what you should do, as you start experimenting, monitor how much your local scores correlate with the leaderboard scores. This is very important. As I said, there are different ways now also to participate. Some are notebook only, so you have to do everything on Kaggle notebooks because of we want to be safe. Sometimes you don't have exactly the test data that will be evaluated because the real test will appear later. No worries. Start by figuring out if what you're doing relates to the leaderboard. So you change something and based on your local running, because you do a cross-validation, it seems you should have improved. Does that improvement reflect on the leaderboard? If it doesn't, why? Is it a problem of the data or is it a problem of a pipeline you built? Because if it is a problem of the data, probably you have to figure out how to make the data, for example, more clean by dropping certain variables and so on. So it can align better your local test with the test on the leaderboard. If it is something in the procedure, it's very important to notice immediately since the beginning, because you can correct as you go on in the competition. I assure you, you won't have time to revise your code or to do anything else, but to keep on experimenting. Especially if you are successful, you will become slave to the success, because a common dynamic in competition is that you improve the leaderboard, you do a top score. Okay. Don't expect it to last long. Everyone will see you performed. Everyone will wonder, what is Luca doing? It's very interesting. Let's figure out what he's doing. And we start to more intensively look for solutions. And it's incredible. Even if you don't tell anyone about your solution, someone by trying will find what you actually did and actually take your place on the leaderboard. So that's very important. And this is the basics. Together with perseverance and doing this multiple times at multiple competition. That's all. The more you stay, the more time you spend, the better results you will get.
And there must be the sort of divide between people who show up to Kaggle and with the objective of becoming grandmasters. And there are the users who are there for the brain exercise. As a result of that, they will improve their craft. And as a result of that, they're going to become grandmasters, right? There's this mismatch of motivations, I imagine, which must probably also impact the result. I mean, if you're there to actually improve yourself you'll probably do better than if you're there just to become the grandmaster, because, you know, it's going to give you some clout or something like this.
That's exactly how it works, Marcus. If you persist, you will get results. But for persistence, you need motivation, and you need a very strong motivation. I remember once when I was working in AXA, I had the occasion in Paris to meet with a winner of the AXA telematics competition on Kaggle. And I was quite a veteran of competition because I took a lot and some not so seriously, just for trying. Okay, just get a bronze medal, a silver, and that's all, just for learning. But of course, I always had the aspiration to take more gold medals. So when I met with him, I approached him and said, we should take a Kaggle competition together. And he answered to me, no way, I prefer to die. Why? Because he took the competition for AXA so seriously, so in a so intense way, that actually he burned out and he risked break up with his fiance. I'm not joking. So he said, I cannot repeat that experience, Luca. I'm sorry. Yeah. I risk to break up again and I risk again to burn out. No way, absolutely not. So you can understand that, you know, taking a competition very seriously, ranking very high, is something that will take a big toll on you in terms of time, efforts, and challenge. And doing that repeatedly means that you really have to structure yourself for taking so much stress and intense concentration on a problem. And that's not for everyone. So the reason I wrote the Kaggle book is for telling everyone that, first of all, it's not a guide for winning. Of course, the editor will say, you can win a Bible book. No, it's not for that. It's for learning how to leverage what the platform can offer to you, which is, of course, the glory of winning Kaggle competition, but it's also the learning and the connection you can make through the platform, which are way more important, because you can know a lot of smart, interesting people, make a lot of friends, and that's incredible, because we are all very, how can I say, very nerdy, but we can connect very well with people, and also you can learn really a lot. It's really a learning platform.
And speaking in percentages, nowadays, what technique, what algorithm do you think would win most of the time? I know, again, it depends, it changes. That's the easy answer. But like, in your mind, what do you think is like usually the one that people use the most to win? Is it like still XGBoost, CatBoost, these kind of algorithms, or not really?
I've been quite away from Kaggle recently, but it's a very uneasy question if you are talking about tabular data. As all the other problems, actually, is deep learning, and there are usually pre-trained models based on the problem itself. And now we have a lot also generative AI competition. So talking about tabular, which is probably the most interesting for everyone, because tabular is so accessible. Still, you know, the gradient boosting models are the top, are over the top in terms of performance. And depending on the problem itself, you may find that XGBoost is good, but not the best. If you have a lot of data, probably LightGBoost can work better, because it tends to overfit, but it tends also to find, because a particular way of splitting the trees that can find better solutions. Or if you have a lot of, I call it qualitative data, so categorical features, especially high dimensionality ones, CatBoost is surely the best. So if you go for learning these three algorithms, XGBoost, LightGBM, and CatBoost, you probably can perform very well, but probably you won't win. Because for winning, you need to use all the algorithms and to combine them together using blending or stacking, which are techniques where solutions are averaged or are stacked together. So one model will make the feature for the next one. And basically, there are still some tabular competition around, but it was in the good old days, you know, a bunch of different models trying to figure out the solution. And it worked very well. Although from an engineeristic point of view, it's kind of a hell. I never heard of any Kaggle solution being taken into production. It's really a hell. For example, 80 models all working together for one prediction. Uh-huh. Of course, it makes sense in a competition. And the principle is very simple, because every model has their own inductive bias, its own, I call it, functional form, in a more, you know, traditional mathematical way. Each model has a way to map from the data to the solution, which is based on its formulation, its internal procedure, how we optimize the data. So it's possible that on a very complex surface response, so you have a very complicated way of predicting, not a single model can perform the best. But if you take together more models and you imagine the solution is like a surface, every model can take care of a part of a surface. And when you combine them together, your surface will be larger than the best available model. So actually the technique, is winning technique for tabular competition on Kaggle, is not exactly a single model, is a lot of models well selected, well trained, and well combined together.
Yeah, because if you were just pushing XGBoost or CatBoost, everyone's already doing that. So
yes, apart from that, everyone has that algorithms, but maybe you can have an edge if you, for example, cross-validate better, create features. Features are very important because algorithm, especially in tabular competition, tabular data problems, are determinant, but they are not the solution that will make your solution shine. You still have to make features. Maybe you have very good features, you have a very good cross-validation, and you optimize because you have a lot of, you know, knobs, you have a lot of parameters to tune, and you tune very well. So maybe even your XGBoost is the top possible among all the others, but still, if it is combined, for example, with a deep neural network or with another model, it could be another XGBoost with a different seed or a CatBoost or a LightGBM, it can perform even better. And that's surprisingly. And the first to discover that was actually Geoffrey Hinton. Every few people know about, okay, it was quite a practice to mangle everything. But Hinton secretly with his team at Toronto University, they took a deep learning competition. It wasn't part of the competition. It was a math competition, I think. And basically, they, you know, just trained a very powerful deep learning model that won the competition. But they already did some kind of assembling. And especially at the time, you know, using dropout was kind of assembling, if you look properly at how it works. I said, okay, we arrive first, but I believe if we take the results we predicted and you take the second model place results and you add it together, you will get a better result than ours. And if you take also the third model solution together, you blend it, you will get an even better solution. So it was something, you know, using multiple models, making them, stacking them together, blending, something that we already knew since a long time. And something that recurrently appears because also LLM actually produce better results if they have the possibility at test time, so when we are predicting something, to have, you know, the opportunity to do some assembling.
And you mentioned a lot about the feature creation. This is something that I also consider very important because it requires quite a lot of creativity most of the time. You have to play with the data to really have that spark of, oh, this may make sense. Do you have some story or some use case of some features that you created that you didn't expect they're going to work, or some brilliance, instantaneous brilliance that you had that made you jump in the competition?
Probably have. They are really lost in time because I did too many competitions, actually. maybe I really have to dig somewhere in my memory. It's very hard. I can tell you the basic approach I did for creating the features, which is probably more useful than, you know, the anecdotal, you know, feature that I created. Maybe talking, something will come up to my mind. Usually, you figure out how to create features based on the algorithm you use. Because, for example, certain algorithms cannot figure out ratios. So creating ratios is kind of a feature, very interesting. And then figuring out how a domain expert would treat this problem. So what kind of characteristic information. So you just figure out how, if you were as a human to make a prediction that what would you look? And by looking possible combination, possible usages of different features, you can, you know, create the features, the new features that can work for your model. And then you test them. You test them as you would test a model. You put them into cross-validation and figure out if it can work well for your problem. And that's all. It's not something you can, you know, make into a schema, make into a workflow, rigid one, but it has quite recognizable steps. Figure out how your algorithm works. If it is a distance-based algorithm, everything based on distance can be a feature. So you can use a different kind of distances as features, for instance. If it is a tree-based, okay, you can figure out a tree-based algorithm. They just split the data, so we need a way to split it well. So, for example, making precise splits or making the ratios, which are impossible for them to figure out, or making, you know, also not just feature relate to each other, also about the different rows, the different examples you have relate, for example, by grouping variables. So each row could be part of a specific category. So what is the average of this category in terms of the answer, or in terms of other characteristics which are quite important for the prediction? They can really help you figure out a way to improve your solution and get a better score. And in Kaggle, you have to do that massively. So not just one feature will make you the king of a competition.
You already touched a little bit on this, but I would like to better understand that, you know, how getting better at Kaggle can actually bleed over to the quote-unquote real world, and how you can apply this analytical muscle and this creative muscle even, because it must be sort of a learning curve and a process to sort of meld together your work, actual real life, and Kaggle. Because if you're just trying to win it goes back to trying to win the competition versus trying to improve your craft, right? So what's the process to actually bring this over to the professional part of one's life?
Okay, as a process is something that you should do in an intentional way. So this is very important. If you take part in a competition, you will do a lot of things unintentionally because you are required to. So if you want to learn, it's something that you have to do, how can I say, in a very structured way. So you want to test a model, okay, you prepare the code clean, you analyze the results, for example, you try explainability, something that is more typical of the real world, trying to understand what is working in your model from what is not, from what is not. If you have a possibility of using three models which can accept all the variables, you have to figure out which are the most important, which can be discarded. So you can start reasoning on what you're doing, but you can understand in the heat of a competition, sometimes you just look at the result. So you cannot do that really intentionally. Sometimes it's unintentionally because you want to improve. So you figure out. So something that is important for your learning. So take some time, some competition, just easy for learning. You test the different way of creating the features or cleaning the data. You test the different algorithms. You figure out how they work. Or you do that at the end. For example, we did a few years ago a competition on Pathfinder. So figuring out which were the animals more likely to be adopted. And actually we arrived in the top 10. It was a big, you know, team effort. And I participated, you know, doing a few models. In the end, it was an ensemble. So more models altogether were images, text, all together was a mess. But one of our submissions, one of our solutions actually won. So after we finished it, I said, I want to make it clear because it's a very interesting problem. Okay, it's animals. Probably I want to work in anything similar, but is text, classical features, and images all together. And there are, you know, a lot of situations where you can have this multimodality. How can we learn from what we have done? So I revamped all the code we used. I separated all the blocks code. I cleaned all the functions. I measured all the algorithms, all the models we use in terms of features, meaning, quindi, sorry, than using, for example, Sharp and figuring out what were the features working. And timing, I did a lot of tests, and in the end, I made a presentation. I think it's on my GitHub, it should be public. And you can, you know, basically see the data from going into the process, the pipeline, to going out. And it was quite a good learning process in the end. So if you do something intentionally, you can really learn a lot on Kaggle. If you get caught in the, you know, heat of a competition, you can learn, of course, still, but probably not so profitable in a profitable way for your job. So that's another thing that we recommend in the Kaggle book. Mm-hmm. So if you take everything for learning, it's very important to explore and understand what you're doing with the data and with algorithms you use.
Great. And we spoke in a general way about the power of being involved in the community there and either joining forces or observing what others are coming up with. And of course, that as you participate in competitions, you sharpen your tool, right? But specifically to you, what parts of your career were positively, or maybe even negatively, if you want to talk about this, but affected by being on Kaggle, like by participating, not even being a grandmaster, because that's sort of like a steep hill, right? But from being there and participating, how has it tacitly contributed to your career?
Basically all. It's surprising because I started, so my, you know, foundations are not too technical. So I have some foundation on statistics and methodology of research, but I'm not, you know, a specialized, you know, computer science engineer. Computers were my passion, of course. So I started working with data in a startup. We did a lot of multivariate analysis, but basically I was practically out of machine learning, more formal machine learning world. So Kaggle became a very important way to state my credentials. And that was fundamental at the beginning because I got a lot of interviews when I was shifting from consultancy to data science. Then along the time, apart from my first job, which was in as a data scientist in Velux, which was okay, found by Andy Hunter, all the other jobs had something related to Kaggle. So I worked in Berlin and basically they knew me because of Kaggle. And they really appreciated that they wanted to have a time Kaggle master in the team because they thought they needed someone who already knew what to do with the problems. Because Kaggle can give you this superpower. After a while, you have seen too many different problems. You already, when faced with a new problem, can figure out the possible, not the solution, but the possible things to test first, which is a very big advantage. Then in AXA, actually, I've been contacted by another Kaggle, a French one, because they knew about my work. And also in my recent job, basically, they knew because of Kaggle. And I think it can, you know, provide the same utility to everyone. Don't expect now, but probably the golden age is gone. Probably to be called if you win a competition by, you know, thousands of recruiters, probably won't happen. But really, it can prove an invaluable source of reputation and invaluable way of to assess a certain position. But also the negative side, because it happened to me to find people who didn't like Kaggle at all. So they consider it a negative point. Mm. But of course, I think most of such situations were tied to people too much academic. Kaggle is not academic. It's very practical, very applied. And you can just fend off that, you know, negative remarks by saying yes, but it is way for learning. And of course, I won't put ever in production anything in Kaggle style. And that's enough.
Right.
They even have an NVIDIA team that is basically only of Kaggle grandmasters, right? The Rapids team is basically all of them were hired because of Kaggle. So it's pretty impressive.
Yes.
But why do you say that the golden era is probably over?
Because now, when you take a data science job, no matter is involved with tabular data or more sophisticated data, the skills required are not simple, but of a master Kaggle, a grandmaster who can find a good solution in a very limited time and with a high performance. Now, doing the job requires you to many evaluations, especially engineeristic ones. So I can say the requirements have become much more depth. There's much more depth in the requirements. There are multiple dimensions, not just the performance, machine learning, model dimension. So you can be a grandmaster, a master, but still lack other important aspects of the role required for data science, of the skill required for the role. And moreover, now it has become more common to find people with skill in data science, and companies, they tend to look first from the academic world, people having taken a course in data science at university or having taken a PhD. It's much easier. There are plenty of choice. The time I come from, actually, we were very few. It was still, you know, developing, and there were no courses, no other ways you could, you know, get all the knowledge and practice necessary to do a good job in data science. So that was a golden age. Now is a different age, but I assure you that getting, you know, good training on Kaggle is still quite profitable for your career.
I would add that it's a different golden age. I mean, you know, I was checking out their numbers. They're supposed to be hit like 30 million users, 30 million accounts actually there this year, which is fantastic, because I imagine that since the whole LLM boom came along, there was sort of like this renewed interest, renewed excitement about the whole field, right? So that could be a golden era in and itself. I guess it depends a little bit of where you approach it from.
Yeah, it is completely different. There are, anyway, please notice, Marcus, a lot of people who are partially active on Kaggle. If you take the people competing, maybe we are still 10,000, 10 to 20,000, depending on the time you look. So not so many. But a lot of people are there to learn. There are courses, discussions, occasion to figure out how to approach certain solutions to certain problems. So having so many people, you know, on Kaggle is quite justified. And now Kaggle is moving boldly on the Gen AI sphere. So if you have noticed it, now we have the benchmarks. You can actually benchmark large language models based on the Kaggle platform. And that can really be helpful for your job and also helpful for others, because evaluation is something that is still quite tricky in the large language models world, because it's very qualitative. And we still can learn a lot, actually, especially with ways to scale up. So to do evaluation at a scale which can justify your work, for example, fine tuning or setting up a system based on agents and so on.
My last question for you here, Luca, is what is the most common mistake that you see people, data scientists, doing when they go about not only a challenge on Kaggle, but a real problem in real life? It can be for both.
I think that this is surprising, something that I always remarked, and it was actually one of my answers to a job interview where the, you know, the interviewer was another Kaggle, top Kaggle. Actually, what do you do good, Luca, on Kaggle that distinguish you from the others? And basically is the fact that I can do cross-validation better than many other people, because they don't care maybe about cross-validation. But cross-validation is the real secret, both in Kaggle and the real-world project, for having your project successful. And there are actually, it's not just, you know, splitting your data into 5-10 parts and so on. There are quite many sub-details. And based on cross-validation, you are taking all the choices related to your model. What parameters, what data, what features. Because actually, you are doing a lot of choices. If you can overfit the test set, it means you are really influencing how your model performs, even if you are not aware of it. And doing a proper cross-validation can really put your project or your participation in Kaggle on a different level from everyone else. And should you have a problem still, is that many data scientists just overlook this part, which is fundamental. Maybe they just go directly to the model, or they just concentrate on the data, because a big problem is taking the data on the field. And especially in real-world projects, you will find the data in terrible conditions and split it a lot into different sources. So that effort alone probably will just, you know, motivate you. Okay, I did a great job. Now I finally have the data, and that's all. No, you have to do cross-validation properly. And some other people, of course, will look at the model and use the best model possible. No, still the best model possible is not enough. So data and model are important, but cross-validation is fundamental. And that's actually something that I still find true now after 15 years on Kaggle and, of course, doing data science.
Luca, thank you so much for your time and sharing your knowledge with us, your experiences. If folks want to maybe continue this conversation directly with you, where can they reach you?
I'm quite reachable on LinkedIn. If, of course, I receive too many messages, it will take some time for me to answer, but I tend always to answer. I have a lot of inquiries also about the books I wrote, because I wrote quite a few books, and not just the Kaggle book. All of the Kaggle book is surely the one I'm most proud of, and I really have to thank Voyen and Corrad, which really, you know, contributed in a very, very important way to the book. So it was a kind of orchestral work by all three of us in making this tool that I hope can be at many Kagglers and also many practitioners around the world.
Bom, é claro que a gente vai deixar os links todos aqui dos livros e, para quem quiser saber mais sobre o Luca, na descrição do episódio, junto com o link para você que quer aproveitar, está no segundo lote de ingressos já, do IA Conference Brasil 2026, que vai rolar em 24 de setembro, lá no Centro de Convenções do Frei Caneca, em São Paulo. Você pode garantir o seu ingresso para ver o Felipe Lauer, nosso amigo da Enter, Rodrigo Nogueira, nosso amigo da Maritaca AI, Roberta Duarte, nossa amiga da I4C, que a gente entrevistou recentemente aqui, o nosso amigo Pedro Gengo da Runway, nosso amigo Cristiano Cruel da Startse, nosso amigo Matheus Borges da Rankia, e mais gente, mais amigos, mais amigas também que vão participar. Você não vai querer perder. Se você foi nas outras edições da IA Conference Brasil, você sabe. Se você nunca foi, você sabe que está perdendo. Então, passa aqui na descrição do episódio e pega o link para você garantir o seu ingresso, garantir o seu lugar. Aproveita o segundo lote antes que vire para o terceiro lote. 24 de setembro, evento presencial do Centro de Convenções Frei Caneca, em São Paulo. A gente espera por você para poder trocar uma ideia, bater um papo, se conhecer e todo mundo aprender junto ainda mais sobre inteligência artificial, como vai ser na sexta-feira, com o nosso resumão de notícias. Eu e o Fabrício voltaremos na sexta-feira para o resumão das notícias do mundo da inteligência artificial. Até lá!
Este podcast foi produzido pela Alura, mergulhe em tecnologia, e Faculdade FIAP, Let's Rock the Future. Edição Rede Gigahertz de Podcasts.